Blog Talk Radio.
Real talk, real game. I am Marty Marr, and I got my good co-host,
G to the R to the X.
We are in another vigil, remembering the life of Muhammad Ali, formerly known as Cassius Clay, Cassius Marcellus Clay. He died last night of complications from Parkinson's and respiratory issues. I don't know where to begin with this one, GRX, because I bear his name, Marcellus.
Well, for me, he was my first black superhero.
Yeah, really.
You know what I'm saying? You know, sitting in front of the TV, watching him fight, what he stood for, all of that. You know, he's my first black superhero, a real-life superhero, you know what I'm saying? Not just some made-up fictional character. Everything, I mean, his life could have been a comic book, and it would have been great, you know what I'm saying, for all the trials and tribulations that he ran through and how he handled them gracefully, you know. Like, one of my favorite quotes by him, and a lot of people don't know this, but it's the repetition of affirmation that leads to belief. And once that belief becomes a deep conviction, things begin to happen. I hold that dearly to my chest. I read that probably when I was about maybe 12 or 13. And for whatever reason, it stuck with me all these years. You know, and I believe that. You know, and that's how he became the greatest, because he said he was the greatest, and so all he had to do was just follow in the greatness.
In his mind.
In his mind. And made everybody else believe it because he believed it. Like I said, if you believe in somebody, why not believe in me?
As well as you got to start by believing in yourself. So his
right.
legacy to me is one of, I don't care if nobody else believes in me, I believe in myself. And I'm going to go out and tell you and show you and give you a date certain that I'm going to be the greatest, I'm going to win this battle, that battle, and then I'm going to keep on pushing on, which is a reflection of my greatest. His quote that really affects us and me now is, the man that lived his life at 50, as if he was 20, didn't learn nothing for the last 30 years.
Didn't learn a thing.
Didn't learn a damn thing. And I had just kind of spoke on this yesterday in Real Talk, Real Politics, just trying to get into why Hillary Clinton needed to just go hard on Donald Trump like she did, because she needed to get into that Ali moment. And she needed to figure out that if I don't stand up now,
I'm going to be laying down all the time.
All the time. And either I'm with my conviction or I'm not. Either it's a lie that I'm lying to you about my conviction, and I'm lying to myself first, and I'm a falsehood.
I mean, like basically, if you're not willing to take a risk or take risks in your life, then you ain't going to accomplish nothing. You know what I'm saying? You won't accomplish any one thing without taking a risk. And far as Muhammad Ali, his whole life, from the time that he jumped into the sport, was a risk.
It was a risk, and it was somewhat...
fought everybody and anybody who said, hey, I want to fight Muhammad Ali. He didn't run away from that. He embraced that, you know. So on his back of him being a boxer, he fed a lot of those boxers out there that he beat because they needed food. Their families in bad shape. That's why he had so many fights, is because of the fact that he didn't run away from nobody, and he was trying to feed other fighters on the low.
Yeah, he did, and his whole team, Angelo Dundee, the whole team is responsible for the future development of fighting in general, boxing in general.
Without Muhammad Ali, boxing wouldn't even be where it is today.
Oh, I think we would have been tuned out, and I don't think it would have given rise to no Tysons and none of that. In fact, Tyson's story, he'll tell you that if it wasn't for those greats and the constant overcoming of adversarial issues. The story with Ali is, it is the Rocky Balboa, whatever it is, in real time. You know what I'm saying? It is Apollo Creed in real time. Always overcoming and adversity. Whether you're not fighting the federal government, you're fighting African Americans. You're not fighting African Americans for your principles. You're fighting the nation within the Nation of Islam to establish your voice there. If he wasn't fighting there, he was in divorce court. If he wasn't there, you know, it never ended with him. Or he was responding to things that he just popped off about, like sting like a butterfly, you know, float like a butterfly, sting like a bee.
Well, I had the great opportunity to meet him. Was on a on a fluke thing. This is when I was practicing the Muslim religion, and I happened to meet one of his cousins at a mosque, and she was like, you know, it was getting close to Ramadan, and they're Sunni Muslims, and so they're strict, but they're not as strict, and they was, you know, having a thing after sundown, and so we were invited, and it was just, I was in awe when he was there. Put it like that. And his whole time while he was there, he was entertaining the kids. He didn't care one hot get up about an adult. It was all about the kids. It was fantastic. That's all I can say. I'm still at awe when I think about it, is that, you know, my daughter got to sit on his lap and she got to shadow box with him. You know, and that was before the Parkinson's was really, really on him that tough. You know what I'm saying? And so he still had some verbal communication. It was like a once-in-a-lifetime scenario. You know what I'm saying? And I'll never, ever, ever forget that. My daughter today, when she went, was 4 years old at the time. She still remembers it. That's how great of a situation it was. You know what I'm saying? At four, she remembers that.
Yeah, the impact that he had on both of our lives is immense, because it does reflect that we both had stints or moments or involvement with Islam, whether it be the Nation of Islam or Islam in general. And it's interesting because he is one of the reasons why I never joined the Nation of Islam, because of his fight and Malcolm X's fight with the Nation after they became enlightened within the Nation. So it's kind of like a double entendre, where you get your light, you get your knowledge from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, but then you see some darkness and then you as an individual, you're struggling with that over the course of your life. And as well as Lew Alcindor, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, was there at the same time. And me as a young academic rebel, wannabe G, I just embraced his message of individuality with regard to you still going to have to stand on your own two feet.
At the end of the day.
Even after we realized, he's got some issues. Prior to we knew it was Parkinson's, we just thought that he just needed to get out the ring because he done beat everybody. Why is he still fighting? And by the time you get to, like, the Holyfield era, you're like, okay, why?
Because he was the greatest, and he never ran from a fight. That was the whole thing about Muhammad Ali is that when I watched that documentary, is that he never ran from a fight. And like I said, him fighting all those not-so-well-named boxers and giving them an opportunity during the time was to help them feed their families. Was to help maybe somebody get out of debt so they can go and live a different peaceful life. You know what I'm saying? And so they had a lot of the boxers on the documentary saying, you know, what if it wasn't for him, man? I don't know where I would be. I don't know where my family would be.
Muhammad Ali is one of the few fighters you will ever meet, other probably second is Sugar Ray Leonard, in which his adversaries say he was one of the nicest, best people I've ever had the pleasure of boxing and dealing with.
Right, because, again, you gave me the opportunity to feed my family. Like they were saying, a lot of times the contract was just between the two fighters and not between the promoters. The promoters came in later. So if I was, say I was a boxer and my family was starving and I'm a heavyweight and I'm doing okay at this sport, but I'm not in the top 10 contenders list, I say, hey, Muhammad Ali, man, I need a fight. He never ran.
I'll say this. Unlike Frazier, who was fighting at the same time and coming up through the channels with Ali, Foreman owes a lot of his current success and popularity to the fact that he fought with Ali. And then he, of course, took it out on his own and became his own entrepreneur and springboard. But the roots of that are with Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, I mean, he's so interwoven in boxing that he became boxing. You know what I'm saying?
Have we ever had fights that just take over a whole nation and then, you know, we just got the Rumble in the Jungle and we got the Thriller in the Manila? We've never seen this since, have we? Maybe.
No, we had at that point we had never seen anything like that. Nothing like that.
We have very rarely seen a fighter say, I'm going to knock his ass out in the eighth round and then knock his ass out in the eighth round.
Right. Very rarely can you say that and do that. He was that guy. He was that guy. And like I said, he was my first black superhero, you know, a real-time superhero. And I'm not trying to take anything away from my father because he was that guy.
Yeah,
but,
amen to that. Yeah, I'm not saying that either.
My father's not my father is my number one superhero. But Muhammad Ali is number two, dude. I mean, everything that he stood for basically is what we stand for today. You know, for me, anyway, you know.
You can speak for me on that. I mean, this is the hard part, bro, because now, look. We're doing radio shows that could be misconstrued as some type of radicalization. We just let them know that we both have very much love for Islamic beliefs and practices. That don't mean that we're about blowing each other up and tearing up shit. But,
right. That's not my get down. That ain't going to ever be my get down.
No,
but
that ain't get down either. But it does mean that with regard to this icon, some of what I learned, I embellished and then went out and tried to box. I became angrier over the years, and I ended up in fights. And the only way I could win them was to actually use some of Muhammad Ali's skill, okay, watching him stay on his tippy toes, suggests that if you're going to fight someone, you would be better on your tip of your feet than flat-footed or on the back of your heels, okay, because you can get knocked out real quick trying to roll from your back of your heel, stay there and get cracked unless you can rope with those. And then I had the influence, believe it or not, of Bruce Lee. Be like water, my friend. Don't even let them know you're flowing. So you got one guy telling me to, you know, float like a butterfly that you can't hear or see. I mean, you can see it, but you can't hear it until you see it. In many cases, you can hear it when you see it real close to you. You know something's presently there. You're hearing it with your inner ear, your third ear, third eye. But you need to be able to sting, knock that fool out. And so over the course of my life, Muhammad Ali, and well as Bruce Lee, just suggested to me that, wow. And then you need to stand your own ground. That don't mean you go out there and go look, be Hellraiser and tear shit up. You need to stand your own ground to your own conviction. And everything that we're doing on this show is about acting that out, bro.
Right, right. We're just standing our ground. We're not going out trying to cause no ruckus with nobody, but we're saying what we see. And we say it from the aspect of us living in the neighborhood. We say that from the aspect of us having gone through college. We say that from the aspect of living through these hard knocks that we've lived through thus far. So what we have to say, or is what we do, what we say is what we do.
Yes, and Muhammad Ali was just that person, as well as when you look at how his children worked out. I think he did all right.
You know, he's a blessed man on so many different levels that it's uncomparable, man. I mean, the greatness that he portrayed, or that he lived, and that he was driven by, is unbeatable. I mean, it's just amazing. It's amazing. His life is a great novel. It's amazing.
I agree, bro. So let's take a break, TRX, before you and I end up crying on the show, and this is a non-cry zone show.
So, no whining allowed.
We can't be crying on this show. We can cry on your show or on my other show, but not on this show.
Not on this show.
Now, if you make a rule saying that we'll be no crying on your show, well, then we won't cry on your show.
Can't do no whining on my show. You can cry, but you can't do no whining.
What if you're whining with a tear in your eye?
No. You can cry, but no whining, bro. No whining. No whining.
Oh, wow. Here we go.
Like my daddy used to say, the more you cry, the less you pee. So you can cry all day, but I don't want to put up with that whining shit.
We'll be right back. Real talk, real game. We're taking a break.
When it's right, you know, that's what it came out. That's what it is.
Yes, it is what it is. While we on sports, bro, I was very impressed with the pace and the flow of the first NBA final game between Cleveland Cavaliers. By the way, a Cavalier is a guy on a horse.
Right.
Like a gale. You know, I went to St. Mary's College and there's a gale. What the hell is a gale other than a gust of wind? No, it's a guy on a horse, like a Cavalier. All right, all right. But they lost. And they
well,
didn't look too good.
Well, I think, again, my whole thing for these playoffs has been hero ball. I think LeBron kind of got caught up in hero ball. He should have passed the ball and moved the ball around more often.
Was it hero or I must say the team because they're not with me. They're not on the page. LeBron
no, I'm going to say it was
hero ball. LeBron is psychologically tied in the finals. This is his 6-1. He's done more than anybody out on all on both teams. And coaching.
Right, but I'm still saying it was hero ball because if he would have moved the ball around, like when they were double-teaming and triple-teaming him instead of him trying to go and get the layup or get the ball knocked out of his hand, if he would have moved the ball, you would have got Fry open. You would have got your other – you would have got Love open. You started off the game moving the ball, and Love hit the first three-pointer of the game, and then you stopped doing it. Why? I don't understand that.
Early in the game, I felt as if he just needs to get, you know, it's like a – you got to establish your range, and just, you know, he does do that. I mean, that's, all of the greats do that. Kobe does it. Curry does it.
Well, let's put it like this. I know for a fact of watching the Cavaliers over this season is that the first person they need to get involved is Kevin Love. If you let Kevin Love on his own merit, his head won't be in the game. Put the ball in his hand early or put him on the blocks early, then he becomes the scorer that he really is. And then he goes after and gets free. He does all the other stuff after that. But let's just get him involved. They started out the game that way. He busted a three-pointer, came back down, hit a two-pointer. And then they went away from him, and which I didn't understand. You stop moving the ball. You can't play one against five. It won't work. It don't work.
It seemed like Kevin Love was as involved as Kyrie. But it just seems like at some point they just decided, well, shit, we ain't gonna win, and we ain't gonna give LeBron a chance to ball up and win it for us. And that just seemed to be just like what I felt, as well as it ain't no real excuse on the Cleveland Cavaliers side. They don't have the number one starting team in. They got the second team. And so y'all gave up on the second team. That's how I saw it.
Well, I looked at, like I said, when the others are at home, they play well off the top. Just like before, Barnes couldn't hit the side of a barn going up. He had it.
But
what I'm saying, though,
but
Barnes in the very beginning of the game came out there like gangbusters. Why? It's because he was at home. He had home-cooked food. He slept with his wife or his girlfriend. He was there, and the crowd ain't booing and hissing at him. The others played well. So, I mean, look, you got to win one on the road to get the championship. That's just the way it's going to do. You got to at least win one. And so this next game is going to be a really important game for the Cavs. They're going to have to show up and show out, period.
You win. Next round, DRX versus DJ Muff politics. Where are we going? Hillary Clinton looked like she wanted to just get in a 6-4 Chevrolet with the top down and just go over to Donald Trump's headquarters and just spray up the plate.
Well, you know, this is probably been a better move for her. You know, so stand up. Don't let him just keep rolling you over.
Yeah, she finally, like, stood up. I've been just the Hillary I'll vote for. Stand up, baby.
Yeah.
Stand up. She just finally stood up, and I was like, yeah, that now I find you sexy.
Right. You sexy Hillary now.
I'm about to bang on Trump. Stop calling my girl all that crooked shit. That's sexy Hillary. Not crooked, she's sexy. And she's about to bang on your ass, you toupee-wearing fool.
Well, you know, look, that's too why he backed out from dealing with Bernie. Because if he would have dealt with Bernie and Bernie would have blew him out the water, that'll look really good for Bernie and the Democratic Party. Like I said, them super delegates can pick whoever they want to, whenever they want to, so Hillary can be scooped again at the very end like Obama did her.
With a quick 10-second concentration focus, will he win or come very close when we get to November?
I think he'll be very close. I think he will be very close. I would be remiss if they don't be on the same card together, Hillary and him, or vice versa. Somewhere they're going to be on the card together, and that will definitely wipe out Trump.
Yeah, if they do that, then they're going to run the table for 12 years.
Right, we can just do this.
Yeah, we'll just the hell with that email bullshit.
Right, we don't even need email no more.
Yeah, or everybody set up the same shit.
Right.
Okay, to the point where we're not even on the Blog Talk Network. We're just doing our shows between GRX House and mine. And everybody listening, and we got more audience.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you got to be careful. I think, though, that one of the issues that I see that I don't like is not the fact that people dislike Trump. It's the fact that people are using it as an excuse to tear up city property and to just tear up stuff and to go ignorant. And most of them ain't going to vote in the first place.
Right. Again, Trump is selling his name. You know, he's in a win-win situation whether he wins it or not. Everybody's going to know his name and his brand, and that's what he sells, his name and his brand. That's why he used the term Crooked Hillary when he talks about Hillary. He ain't going to ever say nothing nice about Hillary. It's got to be something crazy so that we can associate that Hillary is crooked.
Yeah, I mean, once he turns negative on you, he puts a adjective before your name that is unkind to describe you. So it'd be like if you and I just had an issue, and then it'd become asshole Marty or asshole Greg. You know what I'm saying? It's just,
and that's what it is. You know, so.
But it's just reflective of just like a seventh grade mentality to me, as well as a
marketing ploy. It's more marketing than anything else, Marty. It's just the way he's marketing her brand. He figures if I discredit the other brand, my brand stands up clean. So basically, I'm going to discredit Bernie and Hillary. It's crooked Hillary and Bernie is a socialist. So,
but if you look at the last little tidbit he had with the reporter about the military fund, you know, you just don't go off like that. You've already gotten enough delegates. You've moved forward in a week and a half. You would just think that at some point he would realize what you and I realized, which is you have to shut the hell up.
Yeah, you're in the spot where you want to be. Be quiet. Now act like a candidate.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, he's lost his own battle. Wow, GRX. This is a track I redid. I did this track years ago. It was a jazz track. But we're out. And we'll talk to you again on Tuesday, Real Talk, Real Entertainment, unless something major jumps out. I'm out, GRX.
D to the R to the X.
Mm-hmm.